This is Sportridge. I am Gabriel Morenci. The pimps, the players, the hustlers, the podcasters, the people that bust them, and everybody else in between. Countdown to kickoff is on. The NFL season is nearly here, and it's time to start breaking it down and attacking the card. Ian Cameron's going to step up today. We got the Rachel Reddit, Cam Stewart. A couple of things I wanted to get to first on the Wicked Wednesday edition of the Sportridge podcast. Interesting developments. The NBA season is rapidly approaching as well. And for those of you that pay attention to the media world, Pablo Torre has become a big disturber in the sports landscape, exposing behind the scenes things that are going on in the sports leagues that, quite frankly, the mainstream media can't do. Probably know the same stories, but won't do it because they work for networks that are in bed with the leagues, right? And that's the problem. That's the thing in the modern era. The leagues are smart. Like, there's a reason too. You see, when leagues, they'll shop their media rights, and they could get like a ton of money from what network if they wanted, right? Like, the NFL doesn't need to be on every network, right? They don't need to be on Netflix, Amazon, YouTube, TV, CBS, ABC, Fox, etc. Like, ESPN, but you know, they want to, because then they're partners with these leagues, and then suddenly those networks won't be as critical about the league because they're broadcasting the league and they don't want to upset that specific league. So this happens all the time. But Pablo Torre, of course, he went after the NFL and the Players Association pretty hard this summer. And it seems to be that this is his thing now. Pablo Torre finds out, so to speak. So his latest blockbuster is concerning Kawhi Leonard and the Los Angeles Clippers, as Pablo Torre basically has discovered and found out, and I believe this to be true because Torre wouldn't publicly say this, knowing that he would get sued and completely blackballed from the industry if he was wrong about this. But according to a report from Pablo that was released earlier this morning on Wednesday, Kawhi Leonard has a celebrity-endorsed tree planting company called Aspiration that filed for bankruptcy in March. Clippers owner Steve Ballmer is one of the company's biggest financial backers. A company called KL2 Aspire LLC is listed as the bankruptcy filing as one of the creditors that is owed money, $7 million. Long story short here, basically, Kawhi Leonard and his agent and his team set up ways that Ballmer could pay him more money and circumvent the NBA salary cap. And I believe this to be true because when Kawhi Leonard was negotiating with the Raptors that week before when he left, I heard all kinds of crazy stories from behind the scenes that basically, and for the record, Dennis Robertson, you'll see, you know, Kawhi's agent, Dennis Robertson, it's his uncle, all right? It's Uncle Dennis, as he's known as. It's his uncle. And Kawhi Leonard's a hard ass in real life. Like, he's very gangster OG-like, like, for real. And so is his uncle. And they walked into like these NBA meetings and they were like, okay, so we want the max on the salary cap, but we also want a helicopter. And we also want like, you know, side deals. And I remember Masai, who went bent over backwards for Kawhi, basically told him, you can't do that. Like, that's illegal and blah, blah. You can't do this. And I guess Masai basically told the Raptors, listen, we can't re-sign this guy. It's not going to happen because he's asking for all kinds of really crazy things that are under the table that'll get us in a lot of trouble. And I heard the same thing about the Los Angeles Lakers, that there was crazy stuff that he asked for, like shares of the team, that helicopters, side deals this, side deals that. Yet it turns out that now he got a $28 million marketing deal on the side through a Ballmer endorsed, like, none of this can happen. Like, you know, technically the Clippers could be in like serious trouble for this. Like, there's a salary cap, right? You can't start offering gifts. Otherwise the salary cap doesn't mean anything, right? You know, other teams can say, well, we'll give you the max contract and we'll give you a jet. We'll give you a Boeing jet as well. Right. I mean, So this is an interesting development right now, which, you know what? Like I said, I believe the story only because I know from the Raptor stuff, he wanted a freaking helicopter and he wanted Drake. Like they got Drake involved and all kinds of crazy stuff. And now already there's reports that, like, you know, the Raptors try to get him endorsements, this and that, but pretty shady stuff going on here. And if you're Steve Ballmer, I mean, Ballmer's got a pretty clean image. You know, he's a Microsoft dude. He's got a ton of money. He's generally known as a pretty nice guy and stuff. And now he's going to be in it. And Kawhi never even won for him. Like, Kawhi's always hurt. So you're paying him and you're giving him all this money for, like, fake landscaping companies and stuff. And he's not even playing hardly ever, which is even crazier. So this is a story to keep your eye on. Not that I thought the Clippers were going to win anyways. They're too old. But, you know, this, they really could get hit hard if this is a true story and the NBA really cares. But that's the whole thing. The NBA might not care because everyone kind of knew this on the street before. There's a lot of stories in sports, guys, that people know that's not talked about, because if you're – hell, I know crazy things that have happened that people don't talk about, but it's not worth it for me to say it. Like, I'm not going to get any. So I get a couple of hits on Twitter. I'm not going to get any money out of it, and I'll just get blackballed. And, you know, and so there's a lot of reasons why people sit on things, but stuff like this should be exposed. But, you know, thing is, you know, other teams in the NBA could be doing this as well. And that's why maybe, because there's a thing here, well, how come, you know, no one's ever done anything about this? It's sort of like cheating in baseball with the Astros. Everybody knew. Let's not, like everyone, you know, fans want to act all, the Astros were terrible people. Whatever. You're either an idiot, you're stupid, or you're naive if you think every baseball team isn't cheating and have their little things that they're doing. That's why no one bitched about the Astros. The Astros are just better at it, right? So people were trying to figure out what the Astros were actually doing. There was a story in the playoffs when Cora, the manager of the Red Sox, complained that he saw the pitcher on the other team greasing the ball during the game. And he goes, no one's doing anything about it. The pitchers are greasing the ball. And the Red Sox pitchers told him to shut up. And they said, coach, we do it too. Like, don't complain about this, because it's going to screw us up if you bitch about this. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that teams don't bring up because they're doing it too. And another thing I want to get to before we bring Cam and Babano when we'll hit the football is, last night, Rafael Devers was in course. Devers is super hot right now. If you tuned in to the show last night in game live, I said Devers is super hot, and he's plus 310 to hit a home run. It's a great price in Coors Field. So he literally hit a home run on, like, his second pitch in his first at bat. So he smoked the ball into right field, but he really murdered it. So he smoked the ball in the right field. He really didn't do anything too bad, in my opinion. He stood there and he watched it. But he really did. Like, he admired it. He watched it. Like, he waited till it landed and, like, the upper deck type of deal. And then he sort of started a slow walk, slow trot around the base path. And Cal Freeland, the pitcher of the Rockies, flipped out. He flipped out and started yelling at Devers as he went down the first baseline. The benches ended up clearing. It got pretty ugly, actually. And Freeland ended up getting tossed from the baseball game, which actually I don't think helped people that bet on that bet on the Rockies, because we were on the Giants, because we were betting against the Rockies because Kyle Freeland is so bad. But so Kyle Freeland says after basically what I thought happened, he goes, I didn't like that he showed me up so early in the game like that. Hitting a home run. He said, I've been in the league a long time. He's been in the league a long time. He should know better. And he said, I'm not going to stand for that. Kyle Freeland has a 3-14 record, guys. His ERA is like basically 7. Like, Kyle, if you're going to get mad every time someone hits a home run off of you, bro, you're going to get kicked out of every effing game that you pitch in. You suck. Like, maybe if you don't want people to admire the long home runs they hit, I don't know, stop giving up long home runs. Like, you're a terrible pitcher. You're actually, like, you're one of the worst pitchers in Major League Baseball. So for you to be crying about codes and crying about him watching stuff, like, really? And I saw it live. It wasn't that bad. That stuff happens all the time. And if you were, like, good, I could accept it. Like, if you were a good pitcher, I could accept you, like, you know, stepping up and doing this little code thing. yet, considering how terrible you are and how bad you are, like, really? Like, really? Like, you think you have a right to bitch when you're a 3-14 freaking pitcher that somebody admired their work after they hit the home run? Pretty weak stuff. But listen, the Colorado Rockies are a terrible team. Freeland's had a terrible year. He's frustrated. He's always been known as an emotional guy. Remember, he smashed up a dugout before after a bad start. So I get it. He's frustrated. It is what it is. But there's no reason to be frustrated if you're a football fan, because NFL football is back. We got Ian Cameron and Cam Stewart ready to step up. And we got Thursday night football. The Cowboys and the Eagles are ready to throw it down. Babano, how you doing? Cam, how you doing? What's going on, Babano?
Yeah, it's good to be with you guys. And they're both at fault. Freeland, you know, it's if you don't want people getting upset with a home run, you know, don't allow the home run. Pitch better. I agree with that. But I fault Devers too. What are you doing admiring a home run? The San Francisco Giants collapsed and fell out of the playoff race the moment you got there. They have become a terrible
team. He was the player of the week, and they've won 9 games in a row. But they're smoking hot right now.
Yeah, too little, too late though. They had fallen out of it when he first got there. And he struggled, and it was during that time. Yeah, he's playing better now. Where was it when he first got there, when they were still in contention?
Hey, the Rockies have lost 100 games, Gabe, and they still care, which I admire. You're going out there.
They're both at fault, is my point.
No, he's just a psycho, Freeland.
He is.
He's just a psycho. Like, he should have been. You know what he should have done? What you know what people would have done, really, what the normal thing to do if he was really that upset? Would have been to just let him run the bases and whatever, and just hit him next time, right? Just hit him with a pitch next time. But part of me almost thinks that Freeland knows how bad he is. He wants to get kicked out of the game. I mean, like, he's bad. Like, he gets lit up all the time. So he gets lit up early. You know, he's like super frustrated that he's already down 2-0 in the first inning. So he gets upset. But Devers struggled.
I'm not a Devers fan. Like, shut up and play first base when he was with Boston. I hated that he refused to play first base. That's a joke.
I'll disagree with that as well. He's not, like, why would he move? Why shouldn't why would other people not move? Like, for him. Like, they asked him to become the DH. He became the DH. And then after they asked him to become the first baseman. It's not the way baseball works, Babano. Like, how many players, Babano, do you see moving positions in baseball around?
There's utility players in baseball.
They're utility crap-ass players, though, that come off the bench that fill holes. Like, how many star players move positions?
Rafael Devers, the almighty. So we got to change things for him. I get it.
No, you don't change. No. Like, I love you, Babano, but I don't think you understand, like, how baseball works, like, it, like, with players and stuff. Like,
know what I wish, though, Gabe? More people were less selfish and played.
How many star players change positions?
Very few.
None.
If not any.
None. Derek Jeter didn't move for Alex Rodriguez. He said no. Players say no all the time, Babano. And Devers.
It's also a thing about being a team guy, but I guess that doesn't matter when you're a star, apparently.
No, but you're being asked to do something you don't do, Babano. Right? Like, you're not a first baseman. So you want me to, like, you know what he should have did is basically he should have just said, all right, fine, I'll play first base. And then just completely sucked, Cam. Just been terrible.
That would have been horrible, though, if you're booting balls and stuff
But that's what would have happened. I'm telling you right now, the only player that has ever moved that is a big-time player is Mookie Betts.
Because he's a team guy.
Nah, because he's so good and he he likes it, Cam. Like, he likes the challenge. Oh, yeah, I'll play shortstop. Yeah, I'll play second base. Yeah, I'll play right field. So, like, he actually likes the challenge. But you cannot like Devers, but bad. All right. But let me ask you, Ben, do you have the same hate for Eugenie, for Suarez that got traded to Seattle? He's been way worse than Devers. Do you have the same hate for him?
Yeah, he's been bad. I don't disagree there.
Do you dislike him the same way because he was terrible after he got traded?
No, this goes back to that Boston thing. He's been bad. Now, Devers has played better lately, but my point is,
Devers has 30 home runs, Babano, and 100 RBIs this year. Like, he's literally one of the top players in the league, Babano.
He struggled early with San Francisco, though, when they were in contention. He went through this bad run when he first got there, and that's when they were still in contention, and the team fell apart, and Now they're out of the playoff mix. This is kind of like hollow production, in my opinion. What we're he's playing great now, but it's like now your team's out of it now, though, man.
All right, I don't want to talk baseball with the bat.
No, we're done. Let's get into football.
Like, you don't you don't understand. Like,
no, I just say we get
you think that you think it's Rafael Devers' fault that the Giants aren't in the playoffs?
Not his fault, obviously, but the he got there
a crap ass Giant team.
Yeah. Oh, there's other issues.
He got traded obviously. And he struggled with Beto. Yeah, he had a slump. I don't know if you know baseball. Baseball players go through some slumps.
They do.
Yeah, Vladimir Guerrero. I just would have preferred
the slump not happen when we're still in contention rather than piling up the production now when we're out of it. That's all.
Well, they're five games out right now. They're not exactly fully out of it. They're 70-69. They have a very soft schedule coming up. And in fact, we were discussing this last night on In-Game Live, Cam. I think the Giants are worth a look, actually, to make the playoffs. Like they're smoking hot right now.
They are playing well. I just wonder if they've got enough room time left to make up the ground.
They're smoking hot right now, and if you look at their schedule, it's pretty much they got to beat up the Rockies throughout this week. But if you look at the Giants' schedule, guys, moving forward, the problem for them is the Mets are good, right? So you need the Mets to collapse. Yeah. So that's a little bit of a problem.
They get a lot of games with the Rockies, though, and the Cardinals. Like, the Cardinals are a beatable team, and the Dodgers down the stretch are thinking about the big picture. So if you are going to look at a team like the Giants, and we've seen this movie before with the Giants, they can get crazy hot and streaky. Like, they can go on one of those, like,
dude,
winning 15 out of 17 games.
They've got six games versus the Cardinals. They've got another six games against the D-backs. They have another five games against the Rockies. Like, they really do have an opportunity to rack up some wins. They probably will fall short. It's hard to, to catch up five games in, like, a 3.5-week span. But they're a good bet-on team right now. Like, they're smoking hot, this team. Thing is, like, with the Giants, they can't get superstars, Babano, right? Like, they've tried. They've missed in every offseason to sign, like, a big-name player. And they've come close, but they never get them. So now they got Devers. They're happy. So, like, they got him in a trade. Now in the offseason, they'll try to do it again, and they'll try to add to this. But
they got Arizona, too, Gabe, and Gurriel just got – he's done for the year. That's a huge loss for that series, too. Like, I'm reading your mail right here. I'm looking at this guy.
Yeah, St. Louis. Yep.
Even the Dodgers games they play.
Yep. They can win.
Yeah, they don't – they beat the Dodgers. It's a rivalry series. Like, it's like but Babette, you're not alone, but people like, it's like low-hanging fruit. It's funny how people will hate on one player, but, because he struggled when he got traded. Well, Suarez was like 0 for 40. I didn't hear you crying about Suarez, Babette, on Seattle.
No, he's been bad. I mean, that Seattle's got issues, man.
Basically,
Gabe,
what we're
problems.
Saying before we get to football, we wish more people were like Mookie Betts and would take things as challenges, because that's a special type of player, and you don't see athletes like that a lot. He's those are 100%. Rare, rare diamonds. Yep. That's all.
Be a team guy. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. But I also live in an adult world, right? Like, I live in an adult world. Like, yeah. Like
now,
nobody...
if you're benching Rafael Devers, that's a different story. I could see his, being upset with that.
Yeah, but the thing is, Babano, Rafael Devers was the best player, one of the best players, best players in the American League. He's on the, and I want to get to football, but he plays third base. They signed Bregman.
That's
like the Red Sox started this. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, when they signed Bregman, why didn't they ask Bregman to play a different position, Babano?
It's true.
Like, Devers was already there. Devers was
got the World Series ring. Devers or Bregman?
That's your answer?
I get it. They pretty much brought conflict on knowing Bregman's a third baseman. We're going to have to... Devers has played third base his whole career. We've got, potential decision to make here. And
well, if you sign, if you have a star player and you sign a player that plays the same position, don't blame the star player that's already there. and then they tell him to go to DH. And you know why he didn't want to go to DH? Because once you go to DH, they don't like you just become a DH. And people don't like being a DH, right? DH is for old people, it's for fat people. Like, it's not like Otani became a DH because of his injuries and he's a pitcher, right? Like, no one wants to be a DH. So they wanted him. You become the DH, Devers. Why doesn't Bregman become the DH? He's not even on our team. And then, he becomes the DH. And then they want him to play first base after. Like, at that point, like I'm with his agent where it's like, listen, we're done here. Like, you know what I mean? You guys can figure. Yeah,
we're moving on to San Francisco.
You can figure it out for yourselves who you want to play where. And listen, it's worked out for the Red Sox. They played well. It's funny because the Red Sox, they got a little spark after, and then they were terrible. So that's the whole thing, but bad. 162-game baseball season. Teams are going to go up and down, whether one guy's struggling or this or that. But I personally
agree to disagree or disagree to agree.
I personally think it's like racism. If Devers was white, people wouldn't have the same like anger about it. Yeah. Just point blank. So do you have any beef with Bregman not moving, Babano?
Like I said, he's got the championship. But like I said, it's a tough decision.
What do you mean
he's
got
decision.
A championship? Yeah. God, that's a bad... Okay, let's get the picks.
You know, like, I'm done with this hot stove. Yeah. It's cool. God, like, turn off the burner, Marenzi.
Let me see Babano on PTR. Well, he's got a championship. That'd be his answer.
Babano points to the ring. Ring.
He's got a championship.
You're right, Gabe. I like my fat ass as his DHs too, like Rowdy Roddy slug. Like,
whatever. You know what I mean? Like Devers will be fine. And sure. Devers is putting up massive numbers. Hey, he'll probably hit another home run tonight. He's smoking hot right now.
He is.
He's got four home runs this week right now. All right. So NFL football. It kicks off on Thursday night. Dallas Cowboys now getting 8 points. The total is 47.5 in this game. And we got a Friday night game. Kansas City Chiefs lay 3 to the L.A. Chargers, 46.5. Babano, what are your thoughts on the Thursday night opener?
This is a game where I think Philly should win it. I don't know if I'm comfortable first game of the year, you know, laying more than a touchdown. But obviously, when it comes to the Dallas Cowboys, there's going to be obviously concerns with, you know, how does the pass rush, you know, kind of assemble itself without Micah Parsons first game. It's worth noting, too, you're talking about quarterbacks on both sides. As far as I know, no preseason time really for either Jalen Hurts or Dak Prescott. So from a total standpoint, and this is going to be something that I am personally, guys, I don't know how you feel. You can talk about it after. I'm paying more attention to this in NFL Week 1 last year because I remember back in teams on certain occasions where the quarterback and a lot of the first teamers didn't play much, if at all, in the preseason, and they didn't look good in Week 1. They didn't look sharp. They didn't look in rhythm. They didn't look in sync. So this is definitely something I'm paying attention to right off the hop here. But the way I would go here in a game I don't have a strong opinion on, Eagles maybe in a teaser. I don't think I can put my faith in Dallas just yet on the road. I'm kind of leaning Kansas City -3 on Friday. And I like the Chargers, but I don't like that Herbert didn't see action in the preseason. Mahomes did, at least for a little bit for Kansas City. And you could say, yeah, Super Bowl loser. You know, it's not always easy to see them have a big season coming off something like that. But the last time we saw the Chiefs, they got embarrassed by the Philadelphia Eagles. That probably does still resonate with them. So I'm kind of looking at Kansas City there -3 on Friday night.
It is a light number three. It's hard to get in front of the – if you're going to get in front of the Chiefs, you want to get points at least because we know they're not a very good favorite when laying points. But this is just such a short number. Listen, Dallas and Philadelphia, it's a good point, Babano, right? They didn't, you know, especially Dallas and Philadelphia, they didn't play their starters in the preseason. But that being stated, I think these teams are both going to be ready to go. And it's hard to want to bet the under in this football game. The total is 47.5. Dallas, obviously, defensive issues last year. Their offense will be potent as well. Right. You know, when Dak Prescott's healthy, he can spray the rock around the field. You got Pickens, you got CeeDee Lamb. And the Philadelphia Eagles got 4 new starters on the defensive side of the football. I think the Cowboys are going to be able to put points up on the board. And I'm tempted to want to take the Cowboys, Cam, at +8. It's a bold pick. You know, you're getting 8 points, but you know, I have a little bit of a fear that, you know, they'll lose by 10 type of deal. Like they'll be in the game. I don't think they're going to get blown out. I don't think it's like a 41-17 game or anything like that, but I brought it up earlier in the week. Defending Super Bowl champions have been really, really good on these Thursday night openers. You figure that there'd be a letdown and the banner and all that, but there really isn't. Like the Super Bowl champions on Thursday nights have been dominant at home against the spread.
I'm really shocked too, Gabe, on FanDuel. They give you that extra half point too. It's 8.5 I'm looking at, and the juice isn't even that high. So that's kind of shocking. They're plus 340 in the money line. I agree with you guys with points. Actually, Babano, I think a teaser both ways. If you knock Philadelphia down to 1, Dallas to 15, I think it falls somewhere in the middle, as Gabe said. I wouldn't be shocked. The back door's open, though, Gabe, at 8.5, right? You're down 14, late touchdown there. For me, it's Dallas. Don't love the game, but I'm going to take the Cowboys and the over, probably tease it to the over as well. And I'm with you guys. I like the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't like them as a franchise, but this number is too short for me. You can even take them on the money line if you don't mind the juice, but I think they win the game minus 3, and I'm not getting that 3.5. I'm looking at 3 flat right now, guys. So I think the Chiefs will probably win that game by like 4 to 7 points.
You know, the thing is with the Dallas Cowboys, there's so much negativity. This is the time to buy in on them. Yes. Right, so like Cam said, it's up to 8.5 right now. It might even continue to climb before kickoff because, oh, they traded Micah Parsons. Their defense was already bad as it was anyways, right? And really, Micah Parsons, as we saw, according to the odds makers, he was worth a point. He was worth a point. Like he moved, you know, the Detroit-Green Bay line moved 1 point when after the trade. And I'm not even really sure he's worth a point. He's a really good player, obviously. But so I think there's sort of like it could be an overreaction about, oh, Dallas are terrible. And Jerry, like Jerry Jones can, it is, it, two things can be true at once. Jerry Jones can be, you know, insane, and Jerry Jones can be incompetent. But it also doesn't mean that the Cowboys won't be ready to play. I actually think Schottenheimer is going to do a good job on the offensive side of things. They can't really be any worse defensively. Than they were, but I am expecting some track meets, but I'm going to end up talking myself into taking the Cowboys here, and especially in a teaser. Like Cam said, if you're getting 8.5, if it gets up to 9, suddenly, you know, 7-point teasers, you're getting the Cowboys at plus 16. Arizona and the New Orleans Saints. You know, what's interesting too, speaking of perception, as Babano was talking about Rafael Devers, and he's not alone with his, oh, Devers this, and oh, he's Devers is the worst person in the world, and everyone, you know, Bregman's a hero somehow. Just for the record, too, let me throw this out here. Devers is hitting .263 this year with 30 home runs and 96 RBIs. Bregman is hitting .285 with 16 home runs and 54 RBIs. So basically, Devers gives you double the production of Bregman, okay? But you ask him to move. But okay, but back to the football. Kyler Murray's another one where people, oh, Kyler Murray sucks. Kyler Murray this, Kyler Murray that. You know, Kyler Murray is 25-12-2 against the spread on the road in his career. That's wild. 25-12-2. It's actually the second best ATS Amazing. Record of any quarterback in the NFL since 1970. But the problem is you're laying points here. You're laying 6.5 against the Saints because the perception is here's another one. We know the Saints are going to be bad. I think they're going to be the worst team in the NFL, but doesn't mean they can't cover a point spread in the first game of the year, and it doesn't mean that this couldn't potentially be a close game. We saw Spencer Rattler play well at times last year and make plays. So that game is a tricky one to me at 6.5. I'm not running to my computer to click Arizona, 6.5, total 43.5. Panthers are getting 3.5 in Jacksonville, 47. Bengals number keeps coming down. That's down to 5 right now, 47.5. Raiders are getting 2.5 in Foxborough. The Dolphins, this is one that intrigues me. The Dolphins are 1-point road underdogs against the Colts. You got the Commanders laying 6 to the Giants. Steelers lay 2.5 to the Jets on the road. Buccaneers, 2.5 road favorites in Atlanta. 2.5 is a key number this week. San Francisco are 2.5-point road favorites in Seattle. Denver lay 8.5 in the Survivor special. You know, Denver's going to be a popular Survivor pick this week. Denver minus 8.5. Green Bay are laying 2.5. The Rams lay 3 to the Texans, and the Bills are 1-point favorites. Babano, what games do you like the most? What catches your eye? What's the best better to you like?
We'll start with that first game. I'm cool with laying the points. I think New Orleans is that bad. I think it's going to be a terrible season. I don't like their defense. I don't like Rattler at all. I don't think he was very good in the. I think he won by default because they're not comfortable yet giving it to Tyler Shuck. I think there's a lot of issues with this Saints team, new coaching staff as well. And you mentioned it about Arizona and Kyler Murray. This goes back to when Cliff Kingsbury coached there. They've always been better on the road. you don't really want to back Arizona at home. They've struggled there, but on the road, they've been good. They've been cashing tickets on the road. I know they got to win by a touchdown here, and it is the first game of the season, but I think they can do that. I'm okay laying less than a touchdown there with Arizona in that game. You mentioned Pittsburgh and the Jets. Mike Tomlin's got a good track record in week one. He's done pretty well, and you have to look at all the change with the Jets. Now, look, Aaron Rodgers is new quarterback for Pittsburgh, and Justin Fields now with the Jets facing his old team. It's still Aaron Glenn of new coaching staff, and I don't want to always rush to making too much of what I see in the preseason, because sometimes what we see in the preseason is not what we see in week one of the regular season. But boy, oh boy, that Jets offense, whenever Fields was out there in the first teamers, it looked bad. It really, really looked like they were struggling and just really couldn't get much of anything going. And the Steelers are supposed to have a pretty good defense this year. Once again, of course, getting TJ Watt signed long-term, Hayward back in the mix. So I like the Steelers below a field goal there to get the job done on the road, -2.5. I know that's a low total, but I don't know if Rodgers is going to light up the Jets there. And I certainly don't think the Jets are going to be moving the football and piling up the points. So first glance is, can we make some kind of case for over with a total of 38.5? I'm not sure I'm ready to do that in that game. I could see that being some kind of 20-17 type of finish.
Interesting matchup, right? Aaron Rodgers, of course, was a New York Jet. Justin Fields was a Pittsburgh Steeler. You know, Justin Fields, as you stated, I wanted to buy in. I want to buy in on this Jet team. They have a ton of talent on paper, yet they are the New York Jets. So it's just, there's just inherently failure built into the program. I don't know how Aaron Glenn's going to do as a head coach. And Justin Fields did struggle. It wasn't just the preseason games, but it was like, he did not have a good camp, like in practice. Like there's concerns about Fields. And quite truthfully, Pittsburgh's defense is elite, and they know they're going to know Fields inside out, Cam. Fields starter for them. They know what Fields can do and what can't do. They know what Fields doesn't like. So this is kind of a tough matchup for the New York Jets. Although, you know, Fields makes plays. It's funny. Fields is another one. I'm going to say he's like Devers, but Fields is another one that people criticize all the time. It's like, all right, you know what? He won more games than Caleb Williams did with the Bears. It's like, all right, you know what? He was 4-2 with the Pittsburgh Steelers when you benched him. Like he keeps getting benched and screwed with, Cam, even though he kind of wins games. It's kind of weird with him.
You know what it is, too? And when you look at him, you know, he can move the sticks with his legs, but he just seems to stall. Conversely, when Russell Wilson was the quarterback, he'd march the team up the field, but they make a horrible turnover at the most inopportune time.
Receivers.
Like, yes, he doesn't.
He doesn't read things. Like, he can throw the ball,
you're right,
but, like, he doesn't anticipate open receivers. Like, you got to be open. He's like a college quarterback. Like,
yes,
if you're open, he can throw it to you, but he can't anticipate the throw. And at this rate, he's not really getting better, but I think it's going to implode for the New York Jets. I can't disagree with that pick, Pabano. I really like the Pittsburgh Steelers in that spot. Other big games. We've got some interesting games. The Seattle-San Francisco game is an intriguing one. A lot of division games this week. Detroit and Green Bay is a big one. And even though it's not a division game, Baltimore and Buffalo is big, Pabano, due to potential tiebreakers, home fields, Kansas City, Buffalo, Baltimore. Every game counts, especially when they play against each other, because home field is so paramount. And guys, if the Buffalo Bills are going to get to the Super Bowl, I think they need home field. Like, and not just home field, but they need to minimize the games that they play. And they never do. Kansas City always ends up with the top seed all the time. Buffalo need to get the best record in the AFC and get home field, and they're going to need to beat the Baltimore Ravens.
Try to put
Raiders.
Yourself in a spot where you don't have to play the wild card round for a change. I know what you're saying. Yeah,
you play two games and just minimize, chances to lose. And you're playing two games in Buffalo, and it would be the final two games in the stadium. They're closing the stadium, so it just sets up perfectly if you're Buffalo. But the thing with Buffalo is, they've talked about this. Like last year, Josh Allen sort of talked about the same thing. He goes, we're going to put pedal to the metal. We want to go 17-0 and get home field. It wasn't like about being undefeated, but he was like, every game counts. Yet they always get flat, the Bills. There's always I know the Bills inside out, guys. The Bills win three games a month, man. This is what they do. They'll win three games. They'll lose one game. right? And if they could just figure out how not to lose these sort of games in Houston or these sort of weird ones that they lose all the time, right? Like they could get home field, but massive game for the Bills and the Ravens. And everybody, you got Monday Night Football too with the Vikings and Bears.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. I like over the total Monday night with Minnesota and Chicago. I'm going to give these two young quarterbacks, McCarthy. Now, it is the first start in an NFL regular season game for McCarthy, obviously, after getting injured in the season ending and the injury suffered in preseason last year. But still, he knows this offense. He's been with O'Connell enough that I could see him still having some success. Now, it's on the road, but like I said, he's certainly got weapons to work with. What I love for Minnesota is the offensive line looks in good shape this year. And I think that's certainly going to help. They'll miss, obviously, Addison, but still a good amount of weapons for him to work with. Chicago, meanwhile, look, you know, in the preseason, it was up. You know, there was some good, some bad from Caleb Williams in the preseason. Certainly looked good against Buffalo in the preseason, the preseason game there. But, you know, Ben Johnson's just going to put him in good spots to, I think, work with his strengths. Minnesota's defense with Brian Flores, they will bring pressure. He does like to blitz. We'll see how Caleb Williams handles that. But like I said, for the Minnesota team defensively, secondary still does have a few concerns, so that if the protection and the offensive line for the Bears, remember, they traded for Joe Tooney from Kansas City, and they really made sure they invested in the offensive line in the offseason. So I'm fascinated to see how it holds up against a guy like Brian Flores, who's going to dial up a lot of blitzes here. But if they can hold up, I think we could see both teams contribute to getting that game over 44.
Massive game for the Chicago Bears. Listen, every game's big in the NFL, but I think it's bigger for the Bears just because of, you know, they got Caleb Williams last year. The expectations were high. They didn't live up to it. Now you bring in Ben Johnson. Like, if the Bears, put it this way, if the Bears win on Monday Night Football, man, the Bears hype is going to grow fast.
Oh, big time.
Yeah, like the hype, the media hype, and, you know, the Bears, Ben Johnson, Caleb. Even when they beat the Bills in the preseason, guys, they beat the Bills like 38-0. And people got all really, really excited about it. And then the next week, Caleb struggled in the preseason game. So, yeah. And it went back to reality again. So, listen, Caleb's good. They're good. That's just such a tough division. All right, so week one of the NFL is here.
One last one I want to mention quickly, Gabe. I'm talking myself into Tampa Bay against Atlanta. And I know they went 0-2 against Atlanta last year. And I like Michael Penix. Don't get me wrong. I think he'll be good with the Falcons. But Tampa Bay, just to me, I like their defense better. I like their all-around team better. I think the fact they went 0-2 against Atlanta last year leaves them, you know, really wanting to set the tone with a victory here in Atlanta, the first game of the year. And I can't help but be worried a little bit about the injury to the right tackle, Caleb McGarry, for the Atlanta Falcons, because he's a right tackle, but remember, Michael Penix is a southpaw. He's a lefty, so that's his blind side. That would have been his blind side protector. And so I'm a little bit concerned about that absence here against this Bucs defense. So I think Tampa Bay does win that game in Atlanta.
I agree in a sense that I like Atlanta this year. I was high on them, but this is why I always warn people, don't bet season win totals to the over like in advance, because players get injured. And you're right. They lose their blind side tackle, and they also lost like a couple other guys too. Like, it was not a good camp for Atlanta in the sense they were trying to be positive and they're gung ho and they think their defense is going to be better. But like every day someone was getting hurt, and it was just seems like there were a lot of setbacks. But you know, like you said, they beat them twice last year. That's a tricky game. That one, you know, I was kind of wanting to talk myself into Atlanta, but I kind of think it's not a great bet. You know what I mean? It's one of those, we don't need to bet every game on the board, right? No, but we tell ourselves that, right? Like, they need to set a line, maybe in teasers and stuff, I'll end up with it, but yes. I'm not.
I'll ask you guys, Battle of Ohio, Bengals-Browns. Do we bet over and dare this Bengals defense either better first?
I'm leaning Browns. Like, I haven't pulled the trigger. I don't know how Gabe feels about it, but one thing Cleveland can do is get to the quarterback. What's Cincinnati bad at doing? Protecting Joe Burrow. I get it. They got weapons, but it's one of those situations. It's a rivalry game, Battle of Ohio. I know Cleveland blows, but you're getting 5.5 with them. Limp number. I don't know. I lean Browns right now.
And I can't believe I'm saying this, Cam, right now at his age, but I think Joe Flacco is the quarterback that gives Cleveland, if the quarterback's on their roster, the best chance to win and compete right now.
The Bengals defense is deplorable.
Yeah.
It's really bad.
The Bengals defense is terrible. You can't dispute that. And Cleveland have talent. right? I mean, Cleveland should actually be better than they are, to be honest. They've always should have been better than they are. I don't think Stefanski's a very good coach, which I've talked about a lot over the years. But if you look, you know what I mean? Like, you know, they got Jerry Jeudy. You've got Njoku. You know, you've got you got the Cobb. Like, you've got players that can move the ball. And Flacco, like you said, Flacco will inevitably get hurt. But in the first game of the year, I don't see, you know, I think he could play he could play relatively well. The problem is there's a lot of sort of, yeah, the Browns give the Bengals trouble. The Bengals have beaten them three straight times. 24-6, 21-14, 31-14. Yeah. And the other problem is with this is the point spread keeps coming down. Like, I see fives now.
Yeah.
Like, it's like it keeps coming lower and lower. It's almost like the Browns have become this hipster.
Well,
public.
Here's what's contributed to that, guys. At least I think it's contributed to it. I think it's been mentioned on a bunch of web places that Zach Taylor's 1-11 the first two games of the season in his 6 years as head coach of the Bengals. 1-11. First
yeah,
two,
but they're hell bent on changing
starters.
That.
Yeah, that's
why
the whole thing.
They played their starters.
That's why they played Burrow more. Exactly.
Burrow played throughout the preseason.
They're trying to fix it. Yep.
Like, yeah, no, they're totally aware of it. Normally, teams don't even admit that stuff. Oh, no, that's not true. It's just sort of a fluke. It's random. Right? But they actually admitted it. Like, and Zach Taylor said, we cannot start 0-2. Like, just point blank. Like, they're hell bent on this game. So I'm almost going to flip-flop and say the Bengals kill them.
Well, everybody.
Well, they got Cleveland and Jacksonville to begin the year.
That's what I'm saying.
So they're both winnable games.
You know they want to take advantage of that. All right, so college football this week. Last week it was the first week, and there were a few glamorous games. And at first glance this week, you're like, oh, wow, what a big drop-off compared to like last week. But not really, actually. They're just sort of scattered through the rotation, but there are some good ones. But with Thursday night football, with the NFL coming back, college isn't playing on Thursday. So they are playing on Friday, despite the fact that there's a game in Brazil with the Chiefs and the Chargers. But you got you got James Madison and Louisville on Friday, Northern Illinois and Maryland, nothing special on Friday. Saturday at noon, interesting game. Big game for Baylor coming off their loss against the Auburn Tigers. They just could not stop Auburn's ground game.
The holidays are here, and that means it's the most wonderful time of the year to save with Rakuten. Use Rakuten to stack cash back at your favorite stores on top of holiday sales. That's savings on savings. With Rakuten, you can get cash back on gifts for everyone on your list. From toys for the kids to kitchen gear for the person who loves to cook to electronics for everyone, you can even save on something for yourself. Just shop the stores you love and cash back is automatically added to your account. And you can get paid with gift cards, PayPal, or check. Or eligible American Express card members can even choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. It's truly a no-brainer. Join for free today and get a new member bonus after minimum qualifying purchases. Just go to Rakuten.com, download the app, or install the browser extension. That's Rakuten. Terms and conditions apply.
Extra Value Meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
So, and Baylor's offense looked good. So, like, Baylor put points up. They just couldn't, Auburn, give credit to Auburn. Their rushing attack was potent as hell. SMU are 2.5-point favorites against Baylor. That's at noon. That's a fun one. Iowa State, man, the Cyclones have a chance to really, really start to put something special together here and start off 3-0 with wins against K-State and Iowa. So, Iowa State are 3-point favorites against the visiting Hawkeyes. Total 41.5 in that football game. Kansas and Missouri. I spoke a lot, guys, about loving Missouri over win total this year. And I like Kansas win total over too, but love the Missouri win total. This is their toughest non-conference game. Like, if they win this one, then it's really going to set up nicely for Mizzou. Mizzou are 6.5-point favorites against the Jayhawks. Total feels light there at 51. And Saturday night, hard to believe, guys, only the second time that Michigan and Oklahoma will play each other. They played each other in the 1976 Orange Bowl, and they've never played. That was the first time that Michigan and Oklahoma ever played each other, and they haven't played since. That's amazing to me. You figure that their paths would have crossed at some point. For the record, Barry Switzer beat Bo Schembechler, both legendary coaches, 14-6. Oklahoma won 14-6 in the 1976 Orange Bowl. That's going to be a hell of a game Saturday night, but bad one. I was surprised to see the opening number there at Oklahoma, -6.5. The market has disagreed. It's sitting at 5 right now. What do you think about the college slate?
Well, we'll start with Baylor SMU. I think now, look, for someone that's you can throw me, you, Gabe, our pal Rob Vino in the same boat. We love our overs. We do. And I'm also one that doesn't bet too many unders. And that's probably why I had a bad week last week in college football, because the under in college football last week went 80-46, 63% with unders in college football last week. But the question now you ask yourself, is there a market correction about to happen? That now, after all the unders last week, now we'll see a little bit more sharpness, fluidity, rhythm with the offenses. Maybe the total is a little bit lower. To me, Baylor and SMU sets up as a game that could see points. I know it's a high total, 64.5, but I did like, as you mentioned, Baylor's offense. The run game struggled. And look, SMU is going to run the football. They have a quarterback in Kevin Jennings that runs the football quite a bit, dual threat. So I could see both teams getting their points there in that game. I could lean Baylor, believe it or not. I think they're still capable of maybe bouncing back and potentially winning that game at SMU. I like Navy a lot this week, laying 21 points at against UAB. Maybe their team total over 41.5 as well. I think they could boat race UAB. I do not see this UAB defense under Trent Dilfer really slowing down that Navy attack in this game. So I think Navy could put up a big number. You mentioned Michigan and Oklahoma. That's a very intriguing game. Bryce Underwood and John Mateer is a nice quarterback matchup. It was a weird game for Michigan last week. There were moments they looked absolutely tremendous and dominant, and then other moments like, what the hell are you doing, guys? You know, that's the kind of game it was against New Mexico last week. And it's hard to gauge much from Oklahoma. They played Illinois State, you know, in their first. They looked impressive, but again, you were playing Illinois State at home. I was hoping to bet Oklahoma, Gabe, but much like you, I was hoping to get 3 or better. I'm not sure I'm comfortable at the current number of 5.
Thing with this football game, people got very excited about Oklahoma's performance in week one, but it was against Illinois State. And you are right about Michigan. I think people got turned off by Michigan's second half performance against New Mexico. And it's funny, too, because, listen, New Mexico aren't terrible, but the New Mexico coach who came out from Idaho, he said basically that they threw everything at Underwood. Like he said, like, we confused them. We tried to confuse them. Like, we tried this, we tried that. He goes, like, we really threw the kitchen sink as far as like packages at him. And he said the kid didn't blink. Like, you know, like the coach of New Mexico, like, was asked, what do you think of the Michigan Wolverine football team moving forward? And he said, he goes, well, I'll tell you what, he goes, Underwood's the real deal. He goes, that kid didn't blink. Like, and he goes, he's a stud. He's going to be like, probably, you know, he started talking about, you know, number one pick and all that in the draft. He starts going up. Then he talked about the defense, though, and he goes, we did confuse them with our underneath routes. And it's true, Babato. Michigan were confused. And it's weird because Michigan's defense is stout as hell. Yet somehow New Mexico were, like, picking up first down after first down for a while on a couple of drives. And it was weird. And I don't know, Michigan said after that they were running a scheme, they were testing something, blah, blah, blah. But one thing that I do know about Michigan in that game against New Mexico, and I should have known better laying the 34.5 points, is they didn't show anything. They didn't run anything. Like, they literally ran the ball every play. Like, they ran the ball, their passes. Like, they're going to have a much more open playbook this Saturday night in Norman. Like, they sat on a lot of stuff. They didn't want to show what Underwood can really do. But, man, that's good. That has such big implications, that football game. All right, so CFL football as well. Yeah, we can't forget the CFL. What a wicked, wild game that Hamilton-Toronto game was. Unbelievable stuff in the last minute and a half.
Entertainment and football fan wise, it was awesome. Ticat fan wise, burning. It was not so good.
I was on the Argos plus the points, so whatever happened, I was like, I'm good either way. Whatever's going to happen here.
What a breakdown, though, Gabe, at the end of that game. I got to love the
How does
Canadian
that happen
football
in the Ticats secondary? How?
You asked them. It was just that was just sloppy play. And every time Toronto and Hamilton get together, guys, as you know, on Labor Day, it's just points and craziness. That's a guaranteed lock.
Well, pretty much every Argo game, Gam, it's just crazy. Yeah.
It is.
It's been one of my best bets, like for like all summer. Arbuckle over.
Yeah, Arbuckle's great.
And Arbuckle, this past game, it was 325.5 yards, which is freaking high. And he wasn't there, Babano, until that last play. That last play put him over the number, which was crazy. Like I even said, I tweeted out. I said, you know, because everyone bet it, and I said the only way we get this, guys, is if we get the ball with like 20 seconds left and he completes a bomb and we're going to get this number, Arbuckle over. And lo and behold, it's exactly what happens.
Horrible like, clock management by the Argos, but they still get it done. That was the craziest thing.
I'll like, throw it. Here's a stat for you guys about Nick Arbuckle. Do you know that in the last six games, he has over 2,100 passing yards, 14 touchdowns, and just two.
The guy's good.
Yeah, let's start. I bet him every week.
He's amazing.
I am aware. I bet his props.
That's the difference. Nick Arbuckle was moving the ball early in the season. He was turning the ball over way too much early in the season as well. He's limited the turnovers lately, just two in the last six games, and it's been all the difference.
Well, they still lose a lot.
They've won two in a row, though. You got to start somewhere.
Yeah. It's not like, they're still a four-win football team.
They're in games. They beat BC. They can come back and beat Hamilton.
Oh, I'm the one that took them last week. I'm the one.
Babano
was the one last week. Oh, Hamilton always beat Toronto. Oh, you got to take Hamilton. They always beat them.
All over Babano today. No, that was a crazy game. But Hamilton might be angry this week, guys, after that defensive debacle.
Yeah, well, that's a big game for the Ticats this week, Babano. Yep. The Ticats had an opportunity to bury the Alouettes in the division, and they kind of haven't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, now the Alouettes, if they win this game, you know, then suddenly we got a competition for the division. So the Alouettes have been off, right? They've had time to heal up a little bit. I mean, their injury report has always been so long, but you're the Ticat fan, Babano, so I'll give you the crack at it. What do you think of the Ticats and the Alouettes?
So, Davis Alexander, I don't think is going to play this week. He's practicing, but on a limited basis. That being said, a lot of the other Alouette injured players are back and in full at practice. Marc-Antoine Dacroix in the secondary, Tyson Philpott and Austin Mack at receiver. Mustafa Johnson, who was expected to be one of their best D linemen, hasn't played all year. He's finally back and I think expected to make his season debut for Montreal. So this is a healthier team going into this game for sure, even if Davis Alexander doesn't return. But the problem is that's a big deal if he doesn't return because, you know, while James Morgan's doing the best he can, it's been, you know, certainly a work in progress for the offense and for him leading this Alouettes team. That being said, he's got Jason Moss and Anthony Calvillo over a bye week to try to
shore some things up. The thing is, Babano, with Morgan, he didn't have anybody. Like, he didn't have Philpott to throw it to. He didn't have Mac to throw it to.
He will this week.
He had the Cole Speaker kid to throw it. Like, he didn't have anybody. So now his life will be a lot easier with these guys back. And Tyson Philpott, full participant in practice, he'll be back. James Letcher Jr., full participant in practice, he's back. Austin Mack is back. And as you stated on defense, they got some guys back too. But big difference.
Joey Alfieri, shout out to him. He's the one that's posting the stuff on the Alouettes all the time. His coverage of the Alouettes is tremendous. That's where he get all this good injury info from.
And Morgan's not a bad quarterback, guys, actually. I just think, like I said, I saw him live against BC and he actually looked pretty confident and he throws a nice football. And they, same thing, Montreal, everybody was injured. And then so when he played the next game, everybody was injured again. So at least he does have some talent to be able to just dump the football off to. So what's your pick, Babano, Montreal or Hamilton?
There's no chance I'm taking Hamilton this week. Not a chance after a short week,
now
too, Monday to
now
Saturday.
Now they're
going to
cover, Babano, when you flip sides.
That's, I know. That's, watch them now win by 10. And James, they'll pick off James Morgan if he plays three times and win by 10 or something. But no, you know what? I think for Morgan, this is a – this is a spot for him to step up at least a little bit, isn't it? I mean, Hamilton's defense is still very leaky. They're not getting a great pass rush. Even with their secondary healthy, they're giving up big pass plays. But they got Catsantonis and Peters back in the secondary. You wouldn't know it with the way the pass defense played against the Argos. So you got Moss and Calvillo on this coaching staff, two former quarterbacks. Coach up Morgan. You get two good receivers back. I could see Montreal's offense playing a little bit better here. And I'm not comfortable playing on a short week with Hamilton Monday to Saturday turnaround. I am not comfortable laying 3.5 on the road in this spot. I'm just not.
BC were laying 3.5. It's up to 4.5 now in Ottawa, total 55.5. We've got a rematch of Saskatchewan and Winnipeg. The Banjo Bowl Bombers are 1-point home favorites, total 52.5. And a Battle of Alberta rematch Saturday night, 7 o'clock Eastern time. So we got a triple header actually on Saturday.
Yes.
1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, yes. And 7 o'clock. Calgary and Edmonton is the nightcap, and the Stampeders are laying 6 points in that football game. But Pat, you think the Elks can bounce back?
I don't like their injury report. I honestly, the Jake Ceresna is a big deal if he doesn't play on the D line. The offensive line's got to play better. That was an abomination with the protection against Cal. And Calgary's got a good pass rush, but sacked 4 times, and Fajardo was running for his life a handful of other times. Just wasn't a good performance from the Edmonton O-line on Monday. Their defense hung in there. Vernon Adams only had 162 passing yards, but the Dedrick Mills had over 100 rushing, so the run defense suffered. I think this is an O. Now, look, it's not easy, guys. Edmonton's gone under in 7 straight games. 7 straight Elks games have gone under the total. So I'm kind of going against the grain here with this, but I think if Ceresna doesn't play, that hurts Edmonton's defense big time. I think the focus for Calgary is, yes, while we won 28-7, the passing game wasn't as good as it's been. Damian Alford didn't really do much. I think that could change here. And I think for Edmonton, knowing the O-line struggled last week, there should be an adjustment from the coaching staff. Quick passing game, get the ball out of Fajardo's hands quickly, and maybe that can open up things in the quick game and the screen game this week against an aggressive Calgary defense. Make those offensive adjustments to help out Fajardo with a bad O-line. If they do that, I think this game has a chance to be the reverse of last week, where last week's Edmonton-Calgary game was the only game in the CFL to stay under the total. I think we'll get the over here on Saturday with the Elks and the Stamps.
You are right, Babano, about how Edmonton's defense, though. This is why they're so competitive. Shocking, their defense. Their defense keeps them in football
games. Gotten a lot better, yeah.
And their offense had finally caught up to them, right? You know, they weren't going to win 4 games in a row, but... Man, that was frustrating, like that they couldn't score. I had an in-game total. I had teasers and stuff like that. Yep. I needed that touchdown when they were on the 2-yard line at the end of the game. And, you know, it was just one of those deals.
They lost a lot of their energy, Gabe, when they gave up the punt return touchdown to make it 20-7 Calgary.
Yeah.
At that point, it felt like it took wind out of their sails.
Let's give Calgary credit, though. These guys just don't stop. That's the whole thing, Gabe. Like, remember, they beat the Riders. They come in there. Battle of Alberta. They get things done. Like, this team doesn't take weeks off. Like, it's very impressive.
I lean Edmonton, but I don't know if I want to take them again after losing with them last week. That's where I stand.
Well, we cashed the Stampeders over 6.5. Yep. I love the 6.5 this year. I didn't think they were going to be as good as they are, but yeah, they're legitimate Grey Cup contenders.
BC Ottawa, right? Gabe, I'm just going to take BC team total over 29.5. I think that's the approach, because one thing about Nathan Rourke and the Lions is they score 30 every game pretty much lately. They've done it consistently. I don't want to worry and fret about this defense. Bob Dice said there's still...
It looks like it's Dustin Crum again, too, right?
It's a manageable matchup.
Why the number went up from 3.5, because they were thinking maybe Brown plays, but I don't think he is.
No, I don't think so. Bob Dice said there's still a chance because he's practiced in a limited basis, but a lot of times... players practicing on a limited basis, they're not going to play. So I still expect it's going to be Dustin Crum here. And look, the last time they faced a limited offense with a quarterback that's not exactly, you know, the best in the league, it was the Montreal game, and they held Montreal to 18 points, BC. So against, you know, a step down of competition on offense, BC's defense can be capable. You have to hope that's the case, and they should show some pride, obviously, coming off a bye and after the game where you gave up 52 points against Toronto before the bye week. So, yeah, I think BC can get it done, but I feel more confident in the team total over 29.5. I don't want to stress the BC defense.
Ian Cameron in the house with us. NHL season around the corner, and the Ice Guys return around the corner. And, of course, you know, there's the Ryder Cup coming up, but there is golf still. There's always golf somewhere. It's like there's always – it's always happy hour somewhere. And Rory McIlroy is actually playing. Rory McIlroy is the favorite to win the Irish Open. So you've got Ty Hatton at 13-1. Rory is 4-1. Shane Lowry is 17-1. Patrick Reed is actually playing 32-1. The Irish Open. What's your pick, Cam, for the Irish Open?
I'd watch out for Marco Penge. People don't know who he is. He's the hottest player on the European Tour right now. He's actually the second choice behind Rory at 11-1. If you want a little bit of value, I would actually look for Tom McKibben at 35-1. He's in good form, as are the Norgards. But I'm going to take a shot with this Penge guy. I'm telling you something, Gabe. Like, he's one of the hotter players going. We hit Thurston Lawrence last week at 50-1, Gabe, but I'm such a coward with all the games going on. I put $5 on it. Such a meatball. I only won 250. Like, I'm such an idiot. I had this guy at 50-1, but hey, them's the breaks. I was betting football, but watch out for Penge. This guy's really good. 11-1.
I'm just going to keep it simple. I see Bet365 has enhanced win plus 450.
For Rory?
Yeah. You know, he'll want to win.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the one thing about Rory. If he doesn't show up at the Irish Open, where else is he going to show up for? Masters Irish Open. No, like, this is his event.
Yeah. He likes the Irish Open, yeah. Yes. And I believe he's won this before off the top of my head.
It's a pretty good field.
It is. It's pretty, yeah, pretty good. You know what? Guys want to play. They want to make money, right?
Yep.
There's always a tournament somewhere. Brooks Koepka, all the LIV guys. There's a lot of LIV guys here. Brooks Koepka's playing as well. Pretty wild, actually, if you look at Brooks Koepka's odds. 75-1. Who would ever thought that, huh?
No, Gabe, he's ice cold. This guy, since he's gone to LIV, he's lost his game, but he can get it back. But yeah, that move really, if you want to talk about players that it affected the most, he'd be at the top of my list.
All right. So, FUD podcast today. We learned that Babano hates Rafael Devers.
Yep. Devers hater.
yeah. Babano's a Devers hater.
That was awesome. Our baseball hot stove went pretty deep.
Yeah.
It was like, what? What happened?
We learned that Bregman has a World Series ring.
Yes, he's got a ring. We learned that. Yeah, he's got jewelry.
And we had some good time talking football.
Yeah.
All right. So download the show, and of course subscribe to the show. Whatever, wherever you download your podcast, so you get the alerts when it drops daily. Tomorrow, you know what? I'm going to get into some Survivor talk and NFL picks and different sort of NFL props. And different things for the season. Everybody's talking to games over and over. Obviously, we're going to share our picks for the football game tomorrow. And I could live to regret this, but I'm going to take the Dallas Cowboys. Plus
how about them
points.
Cowboys? Yeah, come on, Gabe. How about them Cowboys?
And I like the over in the game. I like Dak Prescott props, too. So we're going to attack the prop market a lot this year. In the National Football League, follow Ian Cameron over at Babano Bets, Cam on the grid, and we'll see Cam on the grid, and of course, we'll be live Saturday morning.
Iowa State, Gabe, and we got the CFL game at 1, too. We got double your pleasure.
Yeah, we got to get you on, Babano, instead of just doing the podcast. Yeah. We could do college football. We're on Saturday afternoons talking college football, if you ever want to hop up on it with us.
We will look to do that when we're home at that time. Yep.
When do you leave your house? Like, the only time you ever leave your house for a podcast game.
That's not true.
Or a soup
that
festival.
That is not true. False.
Yeah, soup yeah. festival or a tiger cat yeah. game.
Yeah. He leaves more than we think. The
battle. Oh, tie cats play quite often. You know, I'm not saying
Saturday at 1. Yeah.
I don't leave that. I don't leave that.
I'm not going
the only two places you'll see me, home and Hamilton Stadium. That's it.
Yeah. Yep. That's it.
That's it.
For the record, actually, there was a Mick Aussie sighting on TV on Monday, actually, at the football game. So it was good to see. We saw Babano on TV earlier, and we saw Mick Aussie on TV. Mick, it was on CBS, too.
Friends of the show getting FaceTime. Good to see
you. Yeah, they showed the tailgate party, and there was Mick on CBS out in the parking lot in Edmonton. Yeah, good stuff. Mick's a big CFL support. We'll get Mick on the podcast. Thanks, Babano. Thanks, Cam.
Good to be with you.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Other than that, you're on your own. Later.